Hello, promoters, and welcome to Roll Up, the official Phil Singer Games podcast. I'm your co-host, Sam Fain, and I am joined, of course, by Mike Molesky and Todd Jorschel. Todd, how are you doing this week?
Doing great. Good to see you. Good to see everybody. Hope, and I guess everybody can see us, huh?
That's right. How about that? we're coming to you not quite live on YouTube, as well, of course, as your regular podcast providers, audio only. But we decided it was time to move over to the video realm. So you'll be seeing our faces for better or for worse. Along with other content, you know, this week is just kind of our trial run. So you're not getting any bells or whistles or anything special. You're literally just going to see us. And then we also have our James Mitchell interview from Galacticon, which we will be dropping in as the main event tonight. And you'll get to see the video for that over on YouTube. So if you were unable to join, if you didn't get to see it and you'd like to see James Mitchell's face, this is an opportunity to do that as well as watch us as we fumble our way through another episode of Roll Up. People who don't fumble, however, Mike Molesky, how are you?
Well, I'm great, Sam. But now I can't give you those hand signals that I love giving you in the video right now.
The single digit hand signal.
I didn't say
no,
that.
No, he would never.
Can't prove anything. There's no video evidence.
That's right. Yeah, well, you know what? It has been an interesting week. Last week, of course, we kind of went long. I think there was a lot to talk about and digest when it came to all the changes in WWE. Now that we've sort of been through that, and, you know, we certainly probably have some thoughts and feelings that we can kind of touch base on briefly.
But good thing it was a short episode.
Yeah, exactly.
We planned on a short episode, everybody. So it's a good thing we didn't plan on a long one. It would have been really painful.
It would have been, yeah, it would have been something else. But of course, we also had the Tom Filsinger interview from Galacticon in there as well, which I hope people enjoyed. I know that, you know, based on some of the comments on the board, people did like the chance to listen back to it, especially now that they've had 2138 in their hands for a while. I think, you know, for this particular episode, we wanted to touch on a couple of things that we're sort of planning on, maybe tentatively, some things that maybe not so tentative that we are going to go full throttle with, engage some interest. Todd, why don't you talk about what you got brewing over there?
Well, first of all, I do want to mention that normally in this part of the episode, we kind of talk about teasers. We'll say that right. Will begin next week. Will be the kickoff of the fall teaser season, starting with some Champions of the Galaxy news next Monday, the 15th. So,
yeah. It's kind of crazy to think it's already time again, and yet it has been quite a while since we've had some teasers.
We've had a number of weeks, about a month off or so of teasers there, but we're getting started, and just kind of now's the right time to start going ahead with that. So as far as other things going on, so one of the ideas, so kind of on the Uncharted Territories podcast, they were kind of talking about their upcoming draft that they're going to do, and of course they reached out to me. I'll be on there in a couple weeks. Working with them, doing their 2022 Legends draft, got me kind of thinking, you know, with it being drafting season for fantasy football leagues and, you know, fantasy type stuff, got me thinking, well, it was a good time to bring back an idea that I had done maybe a couple decades ago, and that is a Champions of the Galaxy fantasy league. So this is a concept where, you know, a bunch of promoters get together, we kind of choose out different guys and with a, you know, standard draft format, and then go ahead and match up against each other over the course of a number of weeks with different individual matchups, whether it be, you know, singles and tag. Over the course of the number of weeks, we, you know, see who the best teams are, and then have a championship game. So this is, again, something I did a couple decades ago, first starting on an Angel Fire site, if you remember that place, you know. But I thought, you know, with our platform here with Roll Up, you know, it'd be fun to kind of have a live draft here as one of the episodes. We can have everybody in to do that draft, and then maybe play out the championship live at either on a Roll Up or maybe a Filsinger Games night, where we can kind of capture the video and maybe put it on a Roll Up too. So that's kind of the idea at this point. Guys, any thoughts on that?
So basically, people would have the opportunity to draft like four wrestlers from 2087 through 2093, right? Mm-hmm. They do like a main eventer, you know, maybe they're kind of their mid-level guy, and then a tag team, right?
Right. And say, so we might even do, we'll announce more formal rules later on. There might be things where you maybe have a bench guy as well. If you kind of want to substitute around, sure. kind of play around with lineups or pick up a free agent, maybe even things where, you know, if the match ends in the double, we might roll on the few chart to kind of see if there's an injury going on, you know, things like that, kind of throw a couple of wrinkles into the equation.
That's great. That's fantastic. And obviously we want to hear from promoters, right? We want, you know, input on the board. So, you know, feel free to let us know what your thoughts are, you know, and we're going to be shaping this thing kind of as we go along. Nothing's set in stone just yet.
And we can, we'll discuss some more formal rules later, but if you're interested in this, you know, obviously we would want to be playing this out over CHG Online. You probably have to be doing the matchups yourselves, you know, in between each matchups there. Maybe we'll have a key matchup each week we might feature or something like that. Definitely the championship, I can help to run that. But we might have everybody kind of run their own matches. If you don't have access to all the cards, for those who are maybe participating in the league, we can make sure you have access to everything you need with all the reimagined sets. The era that we're looking at, again, is 2087 to 2093. So probably coincide. We'll do the draft kind of the beginning of September and then kick things off when the new War Games Reimagined set comes to online.
Very cool. Very cool. Mike, what are your thoughts about all this?
I think it's fantastic. I mean, it's a good opportunity to use some of these cards. I think, you know, it's a lot of the cards most of us were brought into the game on. So it's neat to kind of, you know, have this chance. And I think it's fun, you know, to, you know, one of the great things that, you know, has come out of the last couple of years is we've gotten a lot more, like, interactive stuff that we've been doing, you know, to keep bringing the community together socially. And I think this is just another neat little thing we can do. Hopefully it entertains everybody who's watching and listening, and you know, the people who get to do it, hopefully they enjoy it too. So I think it's always you know, it's one of the neat things about the cons, like Galacticon, having that, you know as you said, Sam, the first time you ever played with somebody.
Right.
You don't need to talk about playing with yourself or anything, but it's first time you got to play with another person, and that's awesome, right? And so this is another opportunity for folks, you know, maybe you can't do it in person, but you can play against somebody online, and I think that'll be fun.
I agree. I also think it's a neat way to, you know, kind of maybe raise the stakes a little bit for the Filsinger Games Night, which have been, you know, fairly informal and a lot of fun and a lot of enjoyable conversation and people kind of, you know, playing matches and calling people out on the boards, which is awesome. But this is, I think, a great way to, you know, to put something a little bit more, you know, official in the brew and be able to have matches that might have a little more meaning behind them. And I don't know. I think it's a really cool idea. And like you said, Todd, it's the perfect time of year, and if it's successful, it can be the first of many, starting off, of course, 2087 to 2093, but maybe next time it's, you know, it's Legends, or maybe next time it's FDR, or maybe next time it's Sentra, or maybe next time it's, you know, Sudden Death Era or something like that. You never know.
I mean, there's lots of possibilities. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Do like just do Chikara, just do Evolve, just, you know, that sort of stuff. It'd be a lot of fun. Will there be prizes?
Yeah, I think we'll definitely have some prizes there.
You mean the unending admiration of your fellow promoters isn't enough?
I mean, well, Troy won the Galacticon tournament. I don't think he has much unending admiration, so it doesn't always work out that way.
Just don't cheat, you know. I mean, that's kind of how. I mean, it's once you go heel, it's hard to go face. You know.
These allegations. I think it'll be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to seeing what other promoters say. Do you have a number in mind for, do you want to have like a cutoff?
Ideally, I think 8 people would be good. Then everybody can kind of get matched up against everybody else. So over the course of 7 weeks, we kind of have something there. And then the top 2 teams would face off in a championship game that we would broadcast, in some type of online forum, get everybody in to participate.
Yeah, we could do another live episode like we did for the
IPW. This is the IPW live episode. It would be fantastic, for sure.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I like it. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. I'll just stand on the sidelines and watch. But
wouldn't it be great if it was like Star Warrior versus Thantos in the final?
Yeah.
Like that'd be
absolutely.
We could ask Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor to come in.
Whatever happened to those guys? Are they busy?
I'm just spitballing. I heard they went. They got another job somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Unbelievable. Speaking of other jobs, I will have to say we spoke last week, of course, about WWE and how after, you know, one episode of Raw and some interesting stuff happening on SummerSlam, it seemed like they were really changing course in some dramatic ways and some ways that were certainly more pleasing to me, seemed to be more pleasing to a lot of people, especially kind of, you know, old school wrestling fans. I would say, just again, to keep it short, that has continued. This past Monday in particular, I thought they did a fantastic job of kind of keeping that same momentum going, focusing on the wrestling, having some really great matches on TV, which was fantastic, telling some cool stories. SmackDown, I felt like, might not have been quite on par with what we got from Raw yesterday and last week, but it was certainly a different, you know, direction, and seeing like the return of Karrion Kross and Scarlett, and inserting him immediately into like this main event feud with Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns was pretty cool as well. The other thing that I will add is that I do feel like AEW, for Dynamite in particular, stepped things up as well. I thought Dynamite was superb. I didn't get a chance to see all of Battle of the Belts, but holy mackerel, Claudio and Takeshita was phenomenal. Just a hell of a match. And I think it's for someone like me who I'm a little hot and cold on Claudio sometimes, I'll be completely honest. Like even during his WWE days, there were so many people talking about like, he should be this, he should be that. And there were times when I was kind of like, I don't know if he should, you know, like maybe some of the criticism he gets is valid. But that match without a doubt was just everything that I feel like he needs to do on a regular basis. So it's cool, you know, it feels like maybe, you know, this will not allow AEW to kind of rest on their laurels as being the alternative product, right? Like now they're sort of like, oh, we better step this up because WWE is going to do what we've been doing with their top caliber talent. You know, there's no denying the talent that they have. So it's just a cool situation for wrestling fans. Mike, any thoughts to add to that?
Well, I think, you know, we're going to tend to overreact to everything now, right? I mean, I think that, you know, there was stuff that was good going on with WWE before, you know, Vince left. You know, there was. And you know, Vince brought a lot of us the wrestling that we're now criticizing WWE for not having enough of, right? You know, stuff that from the 80s, right, that we grew up on. So I think that some of it's going to be, you know, we're paying attention now. And I think a lot of people are giving it another chance. And so I think there's going to be some things that are improved. There may be some things that aren't improved that you know, going forward. I don't know. Right. But I think that right now people are going to give it another chance simply because there's been a change at the top and they want to see what happens. And they're looking at it with an open mind and not saying, you know, this is Vince's stuff, so I obviously can't like it, right? I mean, right, now it's going to be, they're just going to give the product a chance. I mean, you were even talking about the main event last week for SummerSlam that, you know, well, Michael Hayes is still working there, right? I mean, you threw that in. I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of changes at WWF if you look at it in terms of the personnel running things. You know, Hunter had been around a lot. I mean, he'd been away since September-ish.
But
he's back, right? You know, but a lot of the other guys are still and gals are still the same people. So I think you're going to see incremental changes. You're going to continue to see like certain talent getting a different look, you know, like, you know, Cross coming back and, you know, that kind of thing. You know, potentially, you know, Sasha Banks and all that stuff going on, you know, like, so, but I think that for the most part, there's still going to be a lot of the same people making the same calls. It's just that you're going to see little tweaks that are going to give it a different feel. But look, it's good for wrestling. I think that people are excited, that people are interested, and we'll see what happens. And like you said, Sam, I think that it motivated AEW to maybe, you know, step up their game. We'll see if they can, you know, figure out this Ring of Honor thing and how it all fits together. I think that's, like I said last week, that's the biggest challenge I think they have. But it's been a good couple weeks for wrestling in terms of if you're a fan.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's a really good point you make, too, about, you know, there are obviously a lot of people that are still there that have been, you know, instilled and working, you know, under Vince and working under that product. And I think that, yeah, that there will be incremental changes. I think the one positive thing is that for a lot of those people, they're getting the opportunity to maybe do things the way that they had envisioned. Because a lot of times you would hear stories about people who were producing matches or, you know, doing some of the writing or whatever that you know, Vince would micromanage a lot of that. And so, it would turn something that they had been working on into something else. We have a upset toddler here in the house. But I think that those are really great points. And again, yeah, it's just it's a cool time to be a wrestling fan, I think, because there's just some really cool stuff out there. Todd, what are your thoughts on all of it?
Yeah. So, overall, I've definitely been enjoying, some of the WWE. I've been watching, which I haven't been doing, for quite a while. The couple of things I definitely, like is, kind of the ongoing storytelling throughout the episode. So having the little bits, the pieces that kind of build into matches and segments later on, little things happening in the background, like last night on Raw with kind of everything backstage in the garage. I thought that was a nice little twist and kind of paying off at the end, with Dexter Lumis kind of appearing out in the crowd and whatnot. So I kind of like that they're adding other things that, rewards you for kind of paying attention and kind of watching along as you're going along. I think that's been really good.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's kind of, it goes hand in hand, I think, with what I was saying last week about how they, the women's storyline in particular played out so well over the course of the episode, and it just ran through the entire episode. And I really like the way that they did that. And I think it's, it's interesting to me because it takes advantage of the 3-hour format. It takes advantage of the fact that we've got all this time in a way that I don't know that they've always done. So,
This time it was like kind of ongoing stories with like the Mysterio Edge stuff kind of played out in different parts, and then the the Miz and AJ Styles kind of having different things throughout the episode too, and kind of building to why that main event happened later on. So
right,
And then AEW this, last week, I thought last week's show was definitely an improvement over where they've been, and definitely building to a really huge show this week, with the coffin match, with the, with the title match. They're definitely trying to pull out all the gun, big guns there. We'll see what happens with this trios tournament. I know we kind of talked a couple weeks ago about, Omega with the Bucks. So it looks like they're going with Hangman and the Bucks for now, but I got to think Omega's, waiting in the wings for sure.
I almost feel like they're going to try and take out Hangman or something before the tournament.
It's possible.
That's very right. Possible. You could see that, right? The Undisputed Elite or whatever they're going to call themselves coming out of this, they jump them. Right. It's all okay. Yeah, now you did the Bucks. Now you got nobody
with you, and that,
right. They got no, you're by yourselves. You can't be in the tournament. And then, Kenny Omega comes out to the huge pop. Right.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, I think that the fact that, that they turned the Bucks face like hot on the heels of what I was saying last week, I think that that's just that's the way to go. And like you said, I don't think there's any way for Kenny to not come back, to a face reaction, especially when you look at the way that they left things, in his final match with Hangman. Like, it definitely seemed as though there was enough respect shown, by the time everything was said and done to have that. And I think that, if Hangman gets taken out, it keeps that story going, which has been kind of the original story, right? Like, Hangman Page is our guy, he's the one that's gonna, get us through all of this, and kind of be the big through line, that pulls together all these stories with the Elite, and even with CM Punk, and everything else that's happened, and his entire tenure, I think, has been incredibly important to the overall storyline of AEW. So, it's cool. I'm glad to see that things, are seemingly kind of settling a bit after the War of the World stuff. And we've got, we've got more, I think, of that feel back, overall of AEW, as opposed to things maybe feeling a little disjointed or a little off, which is nice. So
Is it between the, between the Forbidden Door and the, tournaments, a couple of the stories just weren't the same for a while. So now it's building into All Out. It's really kind of starting to kick off now. So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully it'll be a really good card in September. Yeah, it's gonna be a huge weekend there, because that's also the WWE's next pay-per-view is the day before.
Yeah,
so like there's a lot going on for Labor Day weekend for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't know how much, if anything, I'll be able to attend, because you know there's all sorts of stuff going on here, but we'll see what happens. Maybe I'll get to at least a show.
One other WWE note, I don't know if we talked about it last week, was did we talk about the location for WrestleMania 2024 at all yet?
I don't think we did, no.
Yeah, so that they did announce, very interesting that it will be in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
In 2024, which is definitely a lot easier, you know, for a couple of us on the podcast here to travel to than the last couple of locales for sure. So I think
you earned it, Todd. I think you earned a shorter trip after Galacticon.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah,
I can drive to.
Honestly, between Galacticon and Chicago, and then doing the Hall of Fame in Waterloo, like you know, you logged some miles.
I got my little Google summary on my thing of all the places you've been this month. Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I did do a lot.
I did eat pizza there. Yeah, well, they'll be in Los Angeles next year, which, you know, may or may not be headlined by Rock and Roman. We'll see what happens. I think The Rock can kind of do whatever he wants to do, but at the same time, there's a lot of people that, you know, he has to pay to insure him on movie sets, and I know they weren't too happy the last time he got hurt in the match with John Cena, so who knows what we'll get out of that, but I think it could be something interesting, something special. And then Philadelphia, it's an interesting choice.
I wasn't sure if they'd make it back there. I mean, they don't do too many in the kind of the northern cities that don't have domes anymore. I mean, they did do, you know, MetLife Stadium a couple times, but they haven't really done any other ones in the Northeast. The last time, you know, Boston and Philly was WrestleMania 14-15, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think they've been in the Northeast except for MetLife Stadium, you know.
Yeah. They did two in MetLife, right?
They did two in MetLife, 29 and 35 they did in MetLife. 20 they did at MSG. But yeah, I don't think they've done any of the other ones in the Northeast, you know, outside of those ones since, in like 20 years. So I'm glad it's going to be in Philadelphia. I think that's going to be great.
Big year fans.
That's right. Well, before we get too far into the weeds, we've got announcements kicking off next week. We've got the fantasy league that you know, we're kind of proposing. You know, nothing is set in stone yet, but we certainly want, you know, feedback and see if the interest is there to do that, to try to fill it out with eight total teams, if you will. You know, we've got exciting stuff happening in the wrestling world, which, you know, exciting stuff in the wrestling world is always great, because let's face it, the more people that are watching wrestling, the more people might be interested in this game, and the more people interested in this game, the bigger and better things that we can do. So hopefully we'll maybe see a little bit of you know, a little bump. Who knows? You know, we certainly saw a bump during the pandemic era. I think there was something else that we were going to talk about.
Well, we can give it a little shout outs later on afterwards. Let's stop letting the people wait here. Let's get to James Mitchell.
Let's do it. All right. So this is the James Mitchell interview from Galacticon. Had such a great time getting the opportunity to talk to him. I had been, you know, a fan of his work in the ECW days in particular. We covered quite a bit from Smoky Mountain all the way up until what he's been doing currently with NWA. So hopefully you will enjoy this interview and get some questions answer that you might have had that maybe you didn't even know you had. And we'll be back after the interview is over with some shout outs and maybe a little preview of what's up next. So here we are today. We are joined by none other than the Sinister Mr. Minister, Father James Mitchell. How are you doing today, James?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's our pleasure. This is really exciting. Anytime, of course, we get not only someone who's in the game, but certainly a member of the Legends of Wrestling roster. It's always a pleasure to welcome you in and get the opportunity to talk to you.
I wanted to start off, just jump right in with the questions. In the bit of research that I was doing, so I didn't just ask you about ECW, which is what I'm most familiar with, I noticed that you trained with Gene Anderson and worked as a wrestler for a while. Can you talk about what it was like to train with Gene and what he was like?
Well, that's kind of gilding the lily a little bit. I didn't wrestle. That's incorrect. That's Wikipedia at its finest. Gene, basically, when I was trying to lie, con, and swindle my way into the business, just through a confluence of events, I ran into somebody who knew Gene Anderson and Nelson Royal. And he brought me and a couple of the jabroni guys that I was hanging around with trying to break into the business. I took them up to his camp, which I believe was in Monroe, North Carolina. I can't remember precisely now because it's been a long time. Anyhow, he beat the shit out of my guys. I just made them throw up, just ran them ragged. And then he'd get in the ring and start shooting with them. And I thought I was going to have to get in there and put up with that. Gene kind of took a liking to me. He basically told me, kid, sit down and shut up. He said, I'd sent him a promo tape that was homemade in the kitchen and it was pretty vulgar. And Gene called me up and he said, kid, you got the gift of gab. You'd make a good preacher or porn star, but you don't know shit about the rest of the business. So that's kind of how I wound up getting invited up there. But I came up there a handful of times with a couple of different tag teams that I was fooling around with. And Gene just, he was just like, how do I train a manager? You know, he'd show me stuff not to do. He showed me how to take some basic bumps and stuff like that. But pretty much he really just wanted me to watch guys getting trained and pay attention to the psychology and stuff. So did that for a little bit, but then moved on and worked my way up through a horrible outlaw mud shows, as Jimmy Cornette calls it.
Well, speaking of Cornette, one of the places that you worked your way into was Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Yeah. And
we have quite a few fans of Smoky Mountain. One of our guys who works on our Legends team was actually at the fan events that they used to hold, once a year, where the fans would get to kind of, have a behind-the-scenes view. So Smoky Mountain holds a special place in a lot of folks' heart, and I would love to hear about your start there. And of course, Prince Karras is at the game as well to team up with you. So talk a little bit about those early days in Smoky Mountain.
Well, I was amazed to get a phone call from Jim Cornette because I had done television. I'd been in the business at that point, maybe four years, maybe. But I had done TV for a promotion called South Atlantic Pro Wrestling. It was one of the last territories. And that lasted maybe a month before they went out of business. I mean, I was like on the final month of shows. They'd been around for years. But sent a tape of that to Cornette and didn't hear from him for about a year. And when he called, I couldn't believe it. I had to keep pinching myself. This is like actually Jim Cornette on the phone with me. And so the funny thing was, I expected he was going to put me with like an Arn Anderson, and Bobby Eaton, a regular wrestler. And, so I'm all nervous and shaky and listening, corny, and I was so full of adrenaline. It was almost like what he was telling me was going in one ear and out the other due to pure nervousness. And I had to do a double take. He goes, you're going to manage Prince Karras. And I was like, okay, that's great. He's a mummy. And it didn't quite register. And then I thought, oh God, how's this going to work? But having grown up loving all the classic Universal monsters and whatnot, I figured that would work. And then he also described that he would have me dress up with the fez, kind of like the Sheik's original manager, Abdullah the Farouk did, or the Grand Wizard, whatever you want to call him. And it was kind of, I'd been doing outlaw shows for years, but it was kind of like getting thrown into the deep end of the swimming pool. Suddenly I was in a place where everybody knew how to work,
Yeah.
But that the crowds were great because they still believed it.
Yeah.
They would fight. Yeah, it was real. They booed where they were supposed to boo. They cheered where they were supposed to cheer. The referees would disqualify you You know, it just felt like the wrestling that I grew up on. And there used to be the road. I had to drive. So I was living in South Carolina and I'd be, driving to Tennessee or Kentucky and West Virginia.
Wow.
And all these places are brutal overnight. You know, you'd have to drive all day to get there and then drive all night to get back just in time to sleep in my car for a half hour and then go back, you know, go to my day gig. But it was a lot of fun. And the Prince Karras thing, you know, he was supposed to get a huge push because that's what Rick Rubin, the owner, wanted. However, Smoky Mountain was so old fashioned that they didn't react. The crowd didn't quite know what to make of Prince Karras. But it was funny with him. He was claustrophobic.
I was just going to ask about that.
Yeah, he really was. So when we tape him up, they put that mask on him and tape it up. He'd start getting nervous and having heart palpitations and reaching around in his bag to take an anti-anxiety pill. He'd get really nervous about it. And that outfit never got washed because obviously you had to keep it dirty. So he's triple wrapped up. And I think it was originally like a running suit or something, you know, sweatsuit.
Okay.
And it kept getting taped and retaped and we kept rolling him around in the dirt and stuff. So basically imagine maybe he was there 4 months, 5 months, but every time he worked, he couldn't wash it. So it was just like a big, funky, you know, a bag of stink that was on him. You know? and it just got worse all the time. Just like a funky mildew kind of smell. Not his fault. He was clean, but it was horrible. That smelled disgusting. It was a great learning experience. Learned a lot of stuff, the social pecking order and basically how to behave in a locker room and whatnot, things that didn't happen in the mud shows in the Carolinas. So, I was there, I guess, about 9 months, and finally Cornette fired me. I think Paulie Dangerously called me or something and said he heard Smoky Mountain was going out of business because Cornette and his wife were getting a divorce or some shit like that years ago.
Yeah.
And I got all nervous about it. And I called one of his office people, Casey O'Connor. And Casey told me, I would suggest you mind your own business. we're not going out of business. And I proceeded to then call Cornette's direct secretary, Pam, I think was her name, and really pissed her off. And I got a classic Jim Cornette promo call about 3 minutes after getting up, maybe 5 minutes after getting off the phone, just like a 20 minute, what damn business is it of yours if I have three wives, you son of a... Blah, 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 blah. If you've ever heard him go crazy on Vince Russo, that was the first blistering promo I ever had cut on me in my life. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do anything. But I learned my lessons and moved on. But man, that was a great territory. And I highly recommend anybody watching this, if you haven't done so, catch all the Smoky Mountain wrestling you can on YouTube or wherever, if you could buy compilations of it, because it's just like going back and watching that old territory wrestling, like the Crockett's or the Fullers and Knoxville and whatnot. It's a really good product.
Yeah, I completely agree. And like I said, we've got a lot of fans over here, and you know, I'm lucky enough to have a collection of the complete, you know, library. And when I first got into Smoky Mountain, I was watching a lot of All Japan, so I was used to epic longer matches, you know. And I started watching Smoky Mountain, and obviously I grew up on, like, you know, territory stuff in the 80s, but you know, watching Smoky Mountain, it was just such a huge change of pace for me, because I'd been watching this, you know, Japanese wrestling, these, you know, these longer matches, these guys just beating the snot out of each other, and it took me a while to adjust, but it is such a even the pace of the matches, and I'm curious, you know, talking about that as a manager, working in Smoky Mountain, what did you learn about, you know, about the pace of matches and when to do things as a manager?
The thing was, I didn't really have to do a lot of that because of the Mummy's gimmick. There was no reason for me to interfere on behalf of a 6'9" Mummy or whatever, 7 feet tall, whatever he was supposed to be.
Sure.
That was one thing I didn't really get to do. I mean, I was, there wasn't a lot for me to do at ringside, given his gimmick. And actually, he didn't wrestle a lot. I think he was on TV maybe 4 times. He was out on the road some. I'd have to go back and check it. But the stuff I learned to do properly at ringside came probably more later when I went to WCW.
Okay.
Which we can get to in a minute. Yep. But the big thing I learned at Smoky Mountain was if you got heat, you better watch your back. Because those people took it seriously. Don't go too close to the railing, you know, unless you want somebody to grab your ponytail and drag you into the crowd. There were some great fights. I saw some girl attack Tammy Sitch one night.
Yeah.
Brian, this is on video somewhere, but a girl attacked Tammy. And Brian Lee just grabbed that big old girl, grabbed her by her hair and drug her like a caveman all the way across the floor. And I mean, it was on. It was crazy stuff.
Oh, my gosh. So we do have a couple of questions that I want to get to real quick. Ricky asks if you can tell the story of the only time you got censored on Smoky Mountain television.
Okay, this is family friendly or what?
Are there any kids in the room anymore? We're good. Yeah. Go ahead. You can cut loose.
Okay. So yeah, obviously what I was doing in Smoky Mountain at the time was like a child trying to see how far I could push, get away with things.
Sure.
the equivalent of the prank call is Mike Hunt there, Page Mike Hunt for me. That's kind of in theory. I mean, in practice, that's kind of what I was doing.
But sure.
Differently with wrestling promos. He had me cut a promo saying that Prince Karras might be looking for a tag team. And I was just on a rant and I mentioned Robert Gibson. And I said something like, Robert Gibson, if you get near Prince Karras, he'll pluck out your one good eye and make you give him a wink job. So. Cornette and I was doing it on commentary, sitting in with Bob Caudle, who was completely, disgusted. But yeah, Cornette called me a few days later, I guess after the edit, and he goes, congratulations, after a year or whatever, you finally got censored. And what they did is when you listen to it, I'm in my rant, and Robert Gibson, if you touch Prince Karras, beep, and then it goes back to, but I'm surprised they censored that considering some of the other filth that came out of my mouth, But I guess it just went over their heads, so they didn't know that they should censor it,
Going back briefly to the crowds, you mentioned Smoky Mountain and how into it they were. Was Smoky Mountain the craziest crowds that you ever saw?
Between them and ECW, probably.
Yeah.
They were sort of... It was like a two-headed coin there. One was North crazy, the other one was Southerner crazy.
So I do want to get into WCW, and we had a question from Joe, which is kind of a perfect way to get in. But what are some stories about Wrath and Mortis? And Carl Zilla also asked about the Blood Runs Cold angle. And specifically, if you thought that, I'll kind of paraphrase this, but if you thought that angle was a success or a failure, and if you thought it was a failure, what you think could have been done to improve it?
Well, excuse me. First of all, the Blood Runs Cold thing was Eric Bischoff's creation. He saw the trend coming in kids playing video games like Mortal Kombat and all that becoming a big deal. So he had planned this to be the next big thing. And he'd hired this special effects firm to create these characters, to create the outfits. They brought in a company to do all the lasers and snow for Glacier. And I forget how much they said it cost per episode to do that, but it was something obscene. Crazy money to do that. Anyhow, I got together because I had been friends with Canyon, who was cast as Mortis, and he went to bat for me, had me do an interview with or send a promo tape to Dallas Page, who then made me completely redo it because he said Eric would hate it that I sounded too much like a Southern wrestling manager. Page, I guess, is responsible for the putting me on the dark, evil, sinister character path, actually. So, you know, instead of being a loud motor mouth, he had me slow everything down and, you know, do that kind of deal. Anyhow, Bischoff walked over and hired me. What had happened in the meantime, though, they had been paying those guys, Rath and Mortis and Ernest Miller and Glacier, to go to the power plant, practice karate and stuff for like a year. In the meantime, the NWO came along about 6 or 8 months before they unleashed Blood Runs Cold finally. And that pretty much put the kibosh on all the cartoon wrestling type of stuff. However, it was a great time to be in the business because that was the era of the Monday Night Wars. Also, we were the number one rated cable television program in the country, as I recall, at the time. I rode that 83-week wave with Eric. So it was a great featured spot. You know, it was a mid-card act, but we generally, for at least for a while, didn't lose on TV. But there was only so far you could go in that because everything around us had changed. Wrestlers that used to have gimmick names were using their street names, you know, and it made us just stick out like a sore thumb. And at some point, I think they, after about the first 9 or 10 months of it, once the new had worn off, they just kind of threw us to the wolves and, you know, we knew the writing on the wall. Was there anything that could have been done to make it better? Yeah. Don't, you know, push it the way you were supposed to. Right. You know, it was like we were allowed to beat luchadors. We were allowed to beat your guys that were maybe high-end jobbers, the kind of jobbers that won on TV on and off. But, you know, we weren't getting beyond a certain level. You know, we were stuck there and there was nowhere to go. However, you know, the funny thing is, wrestling nowadays has a lot of that. You know, these promotions, what is it, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and things like that. There's a big market for that kind of stuff. So in a way, it was kind of 25 years ahead of this time, or 20, because there are, I mean, a lot of smaller promotions that are doing pretty well feature that kind of stuff, obviously without that kind of production. But we were talking earlier about learning what to do at ringside. You know, going to WCW is a huge jump. I thought Smoky Mountain was a huge, you know, well, it was in orders of magnitude, but WCW now, I've just really hopped into the big leagues. Guys like Pee Wee Anderson and Nick Patrick were real helpful with me, especially like telling me how to work the camera and, you know, where to always, you know, make sure that your face is towards facing the hard camera so they can see you. Don't have your back to it or you're not getting it. That everything was about FaceTime. And he'd teach me how to, which camera to look into and how, you know, there was timing and a way to do things. And another important thing he said was when your guy's going to lose, that's when you're not on camera. Go take yourself out of the frame. You know, look at the monitor up there on the tight drawn or whatever you want to call it. And make sure right before your guy takes the 1, 2, 3, you step out of the frame, you know, which made sense. I still do that to this day if I can. But yeah, that really was a learning, you know, learn as you work and go. But I think I had maybe a 2.5-3 month learning curve when I first got there before once you see yourself making stupid mistakes on national TV, you tend to not make them anymore.
Sure, I can imagine.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, like when I got there, you know, guys bang on the mat.
Yeah.
I had no idea there was a reason for that. I thought they were just, you know, drawing attention to themselves. I didn't realize, you know, that's a heel's way of fooling the fans into getting into a babyface chant or whatever, you know, during a rest hold. So I would just be sitting there banging on the mat like an idiot and get home and look at it, knew something didn't look right. And then Paige or somebody was like, no, you idiot, you're supposed to do that. Now you're not supposed to go bang, 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 bang. It should be like three things, like boom, 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 so they can chant DDT or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So, but that was an incredible time to be in the wrestling business. All the spoils of war, all of, God, it was that it was crazy, and wrestlers could get away with anything.
Yeah,
and, you know, everybody was looked at. Cops would pull you over and let you get off. Speeding tickets. All you had to do was, you know, keep some merch in your car, keep a handful of autographed photos. Like I had some that I forged of Goldberg and Flair and people like that, completely forged by me. But you get a speeding ticket and have the, as soon as you see the blue light, throw those up on your dash, you know, and they come up and start talking to you and go, hey, can you get me some tickets? Sure. Hey, by the way, give this picture of Ric Flair to your kid or whatever, you know. good time to be alive.
So, you know, and I'm not looking for any dirt or any salacious stuff unless you want to give it to us. But as far as, you know, the party scene, were there guys in particular that you really enjoyed partying with?
Oh, yeah. Public Enemy. Crazy people.
Yeah.
God, I mean, dude, everybody party. I mean, Public Enemy were probably the craziest. You know,
yeah.
Johnny Grunge was not above stealing the production truck and take it off in the middle of the night to go buy cigarettes or whatever the hell he did. He was insane. Who else was in that crowd we ran with that was so wild? Louis Spicoli was crazy. Well, actually, a lot of the people who are dead now.
Right. I was just thinking
I don't want to be irreverent, but... Yeah, we ran hard.
Yeah.
We ran real hard. And it's amazing that anybody ever made it to work the next day. You know, some of them didn't sometimes, you know.
Yeah. So, talking about, you know, learning things for the camera, for instance, it seems like, you know, performing is something that is kind of just in your blood, you know. And I'm wondering if that's true. You know, were you always interested in performing one way or another? Not even necessarily with wrestling. You know, would you ever think about getting into acting? Did you ever, you know, like, because it seems like you have a good grasp of character. Or was that something that you really did work on through the years?
Well, you know, as a little kid, you know, I guess. Obviously as a little kid, you're not thinking that far ahead about it. But,
sure.
You know, when everybody else was on the playground playing army or whatever, I was out there being the Wolfman and Frankenstein and the Mummy and Dracula. And I could do all, you know, I'd spend hours in the mirror doing all of their faces, you know. So, you know, I guess I was, what do the kids call it these days? Cosplay?
Oh, yeah. So it was
cosplaying back then. And, you know, I spent some time in music. But, yeah, the funny thing is I enjoy performing. But for the longest time, believe it or not, I was painfully shy. Painfully shy. So I remember when I first got into the wrestling business, like I'd get nauseous when I'd walk out, when I'd hear a crowd and stuff like that. I mean, I don't have any of the problems now, but yeah, I'm pretty much probably a frustrated actor, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
You know, a frustrated, untrained actor. But I enjoy, you know, I'm like, all of us in this crazy business, I'm addicted to the roar of the crowd, you know?
Sure. So in WCW, you know, after things kind of cooled off, no pun intended, with Mortis and Wrath and Glacier, you had the opportunity to do sort of a segment on WCW Saturday Night. And I'm curious, you know, what did you think of that? You know, because obviously you go from being like on Nitro and, you know, and having these pay-per-view spots, and now you're on Saturday Night. Not that there wasn't good stuff on Saturday Night, but it's certainly not Nitro. Did you feel like it was an opportunity, or did you kind of look at it as like, okay, I'm just getting pushed off to do this other thing?
Oh, I looked at it as an opportunity, but I'll tell you, much fun as I had in WCW at that time, I kind of crawl into a fetal position when I look back at my performances there, because that segment I did was, you know, it was like an editorial segment. But they had me do it in character.
Yeah.
So that was kind of goofy, you know? I didn't look at it that way at the time. I mean, looking back at it now, I'd immediately turn it off if it pops up somewhere. but I've never been one to whine and complain when given an opportunity. I generally try to catch the ball and run a touchdown, as you know, if I can. So
you know, kind of transitioning, you know, under that same sentiment into ECW, and comparing maybe like Smoky Mountain, WCW, and ECW, did you feel like you were overproduced at any point in any of those companies? Like, did you get more freedom? I mean, I'm assuming probably ECW, but like, did you feel you had more freedom in one place as opposed to another? And did you ever feel like when people were telling you what to do, did that, you know, that rub you the wrong way? Did you want more creative freedom?
WCW, to the degree that they did anything with us, was kind of overproduced. Jim Cornette let me do whatever I wanted to do. Nice. Paulie did too. Paulie would give you two or three sentences off the top of his head and let you run with it. TNA was, I pretty much had freedom to do whatever I wanted to do there too. So I haven't really had a lot of creative oppression, you know. And the way I look, I mean, yes, I've been involved with stuff that I thought was stupid from time to time, but I have, you know, I'm certainly capable of walking away from it if I want to. So I have to shoulder the blame partially if I'm part of the process or part of the product. You know, I contributed to it too. So, you know, I'm not going to dump all over somebody else's creatives if I took a part in it, you know.
Sure.
Or at least say that they are, I am as guilty as they are of making something suck.
Well, something that I certainly didn't think sucked, and I was a big fan of at the time, was in ECW, you know, your work with Tajiri and Mikey Whipwreck. I, you know, having followed ECW for a few years at that point, and having seen sort of the trajectory of Mikey Whipwreck's career, and then being really into Tajiri when he first, you know, debuted, I just thought it was such a unique idea. It was something different for them to do. Talk a little bit about working with them, and I mean, I'm assuming that was probably all Paulie, right? Like, that was, you know, he was just like, here, I'm going to put you three together. But if it wasn't, like, talk about how that came to be.
That was a series of fortuitous accidents. When I first came in, and I'd been coming in for a few weeks and they weren't paying me, I was just getting on TV because, you know, I'd been off WCW TV for 2 years. I was supposed to be involved in an angle with Raven, where I was going to be his therapist that was taking advantage of him. Mikey had also just returned from WCW about that time, and he was kind of paying his penance for having left. Because usually if you left and went to WCW or WWE, when you came back, you were going to do the job on your way in for a while until you regained the love and trust of fans. Mikey was there, and it was like he was off camera, and Paulie just had him laugh, cackle, had us both cackle for no reason at the same time. He stuck us together. It didn't make any sense to me. I'd never met Mikey before this, and you know, Mikey's about my size. Rick. So I was thinking, man, why are you going to put me with this guy? Who the hell? He doesn't look like a star, you know? I had no idea of his background in ECW and what all he'd done, and meeting Steve Austin and Mick Foley and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But we got along great. And, you know, ECW was a place where the partying went on as the show was taking place. So we became fast friends. And the one thing we figured was if we wanted to stand up, because everybody was trying so hard to be hardcore.
Yeah.
I remember Boris Malenko once said, if everybody around you is screaming, you whisper. If everybody whispers, you scream. Well, what would be the most non-hardcore thing to do in a hardcore wrestling promotion? Well, basically have some strange character who looks like he's straight out of a cartoon, kind of like the Great Gazoo used to pop up in the Flintstones or whatever his name was. And so Mikey and I would do these goofy ha-ha cornball promos that you would think on the surface we should have been run out of town, tarred and feathered. And I guess because it was so different, the crowd just reacted, you know, got with us. And I mean, we got over pretty strongly. And anyhow, The Tajiri thing happened by accident. It was like, I forget the reason, they were in, they had a face off in the ring for some reason. I think there was a tag team match. Somebody didn't show up. I can't remember. It's been so long now. But I remember at the end of the match, Mikey and Tajiri just completely ad-libbed this thing where they started looking at each other like mimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you're okay with me. And it was, it had not been discussed or anything. They were just doing a little ha-ha in the ring. And the crowd reacted strongly to that. And I think like the next week, or maybe even after that show, Mike had, Paulie had him start doing promos with us. And, you know, and it was funny because Tajiri didn't speak English unless he was went, as the joke used to be, Tajiri doesn't speak English unless he's going over. So if he was going to lose, he'd be like, oh, no, not so much. Not so much. Maybe not so much. If he was winning, yeah, sure, I'm going to give you the tarantula and the spinning back kick and you're going to lose. You know, clear as day English. But, it was fun to bounce. I mean, it was some of it, I mean, was so damn silly.
Yeah.
But it was a fun time. I mean, ECW was, wow, that was fun times. That was, the ladies were still around in the day back then still. It was just crazy. Tajiri and Mikey had some great matches too, like with the FBI, really strong series matches with them. A lot of fun there. ECW was a different beast, you know?
Yeah.
I had to get used to the fact that there were no rules. So that was, how can you be a, I was a baby face when I was there, so it wouldn't have mattered. But how would you be a heel manager?
Right.
The referee lets you do everything in front of him anyway. You don't get arrested, for chairs and tables, and you don't get counted out if you fight up into the crowd for 2.5 minutes all over the arena. So it was just the kind of shit your pants and dive in type of deal. what in Rome do as the Romans do, I guess.
Sure. You mentioned Raven a little bit ago, and obviously you had interactions with Raven in WCW, and then of course later on in TNA as well.
Yeah.
You talk a little bit about Raven and just your working relationship with him and kind of what you got from him, because he's always talked about as having such a great mind for the business and being somebody who's just a standout performer. So I'm interested to hear kind of your take on your work with him.
Raven's a great bunch of guys. The Raven we know now is a far kinder, gentler, sober Raven. The old Raven, actually, I mean, he was funny and very smart, very creative, but he was a bit of a dick back in the day. Mm. Had a bit of an attitude. And way back when, he kind of treated the young boys as bag carriers like shit. Mm. But, he got through all that and he changed. But working with him, he's the kind of guy that would call you at 3 o'clock in the morning. Hey, Vandy, I got an idea, blah, 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 blah. And he loved wrestling. He lived for it. He talked about it. His mind was always spinning. I would say, in my opinion, what made me after years of being in wrestling, and this is after WCW, after ECW, was when I had the feud with Raven in TNA. That was the first time I felt like when I was cutting promos on somebody that I was sparring with an equal, mm-hmm. It wasn't me just cutting a promo on a lower mid-card guy that was beneath me in the pecking order. This is Raven, and he's bringing his A game.
Yeah.
He laid things out very intricately. His psychology was impeccable. And he really, when he put matches or stories together, he was thinking several chess pieces ahead on the board, so to speak.
Yeah.
And he'd set things up to where the crowd thought they were going to get one thing, just the way things were set up.
Yeah.
And he'd pull the rug right out from under, to keep the suspense. And once Raven got clean and sober, then it was a real joy to work with. Then, he didn't have it. And, I'm not telling tales out of school with that. He'll admit it himself. He was a bit of a mess for a while. But he's a real sharp mind, and he's a guy that should be involved creatively with one of the major companies,
Yeah.
I don't think he can go physically anymore. anywhere, if at all, because he hurt himself a lot over the years. But he's a great mind and a super teacher. He's always been a guy who took people under his wing, no matter where he goes. When you see him with his various versions of the flock or the gathering or whatever you want to call them, those are guys he's actually mentoring, behind the scenes and teaching them how to behave. And how to work in the ring and what to do, how to deal with the politics of wrestling and whatnot. But yeah, it was a real highlight of my career was that the feud with Raven and TNA probably lasted, 9 months or something, 6 months? I can't remember. It was a good long time. But that's what I felt like I had arrived. I came into my own, where instead of hitting a home run like 1 out of 4 times, 1 out of 5 times, Raven kept me so motivated, and I had to be on my toes. Otherwise he'd walk all over me. He's Raven. I'm not, I had to bring my A game, and some of the best promos I ever did, I think, were during that series with Raven. So he was a harsh teacher and a stern master, and just a savant, a genius when it comes to wrestling. As far as I'm concerned, he kind of put me on the map in the larger bit, to where instead of being a footnote in most wrestling reports of the week, I was actually talked about. He gave me an opportunity to show off.
Really. Yeah, well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things I wanted to ask you about, of course, was your time in TNA did feel like, obviously there's great stuff in Smoky Mountain and WCW and ECW, but I feel like in TNA you really did get more of a spotlight. You really did get a chance to just to work at your highest level, and not just with Raven. I mean, the stuff you did with like Abyss and Sting. So it's interesting because, as fans, obviously reading things and hearing things about that company in that particular period of time, there's a lot of stuff that you hear about things were not run, right or whatever. But it seems like you did all right. You had a good time. Can you talk a little bit about your experience? Because again, you're working on top in the main event with Abyss and Sting and that sort of stuff, and just how working for TNA was for you.
When they first started, I actually thought this was going to be a quick money mark hit and run type of thing. To me, when I first went there, it was, hey, I'm going to get to party with the boys again. This is going to last about a month, and then they're going to run out of money. And actually, that's almost what happened a month later, but before Panda Energy stepped in. TNA was real disorganized at first. They were throwing a lot of things at the wall, trying to see what would stick. Some of it was really good. Some of it was really bad. Once they got their feet beneath them, got steady, they started turning out a really good product. And when they had me with the New Church, which had a rotating cast of members, but the cornerstone was always Wolfie D as Slash. What a great guy he is. It's a ring general, super guy. He and Harris had a great series. He and Brian Lee had a great series of matches with Chris Harris and James Storm, the America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
Some of those were just amazing. We had a pretty long feud with them. Then I came back and I did a thing with Raven, and that was more about me versus Raven personally. The stuff with Abyss, I'd been gone for like a year and a half. They brought me back with Abyss. That was a super strong run.
Yeah.
It was a perfect pairing of a monster who shouldn't speak, with a creepy mouthpiece. and again, all that stuff took me to a completely different level. So even though a lot of it I thought was goofy, and the business about me being his father and getting shot and whatnot, I thought was kind of stupid and shouldn't happen. But sure, if I had acted that way on TV about it, which you will see people do on TV sometimes, if they don't like the material they're given, they look like they're just phoning it in or making fun of it. How many times in my life have an opportunity Sting and Tom? This is me and Sting, us two. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, you don't screw that up by blowing it off or complaining to the office. So I just dug my heels in and tried to really, instead of coming to work pissed off, I would come in and shake hands. But what are we going to do today? And I would just try to make it as real to me as I could, you know? So, the wrestling business, you know, I've been in it long enough that it's a completely different beast than what I got into.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, if you look at a match from 1989 and look at a match from 2022.
Yeah.
They bear no resemblance to each other almost at all. but it's kind of like the frog being in a pot of boiling water. You don't know it's getting hot, you know, until it's too late. I look around. I go, man, all this has happened around me slowly without me really noticing it. Not a jarring big change, but TNA was or Impact as they're known now. They were undergoing a lot of growth, a lot of changing, and you know, trying to see what happened. But they, when they were on Spike TV, that was a hell of a roster they had.
Without a doubt.
I mean, their pay-per-views, every bit as good, if not better, on a consistent basis than McMahon's were in WWE. The women's division at that time. And in TNA, WWE couldn't touch it. I mean, WWE had pretty girls, but they had girls who did cat fights. Right. Dutch Mantel started taking the girls real seriously, the knockouts, I guess he called them. And he started building a really strong women's division, which I think is somewhat responsible for the explosion of women wrestling that we've had in recent years. Impact, and they're still around. Impact will always be, they've had their ups and downs. They've avoided death a few times. It's like a cockroach, You can't, they'll survive a nuclear explosion. And they've got a real good product going on right now too. There's more people need to see it, and it's on Access TV. But TNA was, had a great run, frustrating at times, some of the stupid stuff they would do back in the day, depending on who was running it or who was booking it, but they're still around today, and they're worth watching.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think that luckily they've gotten a little bit more visibility over the past year or so. But I hope that that they can continue kind of the string of successes that they've had, because they're working with great talent and bringing people along as well. And their women's division, has definitely always been something pretty strong. You got to work with, of course, like Rosemary and Sue Young and Allie, and I think that being here in Chicago, I've seen a lot of Shimmer shows and sort of getting to see Rosemary / Courtney Rush and kind of her career trajectory. So I'm interested, working with them, being a part of that storyline. You fit so well into it. What did you think of all that?
If you would have asked me before I did it, if I would have known what it was, I probably would have said no. We went to go film that first segment in a haunted house here in Orlando. I thought it was going to be like the Boiler Room match. I thought they were just going to wrestle, have a hardcore match in a haunted house, right?
Yeah.
And I looked out the corner of my eye, and this girl, one of Sue Young's bride, comes running at another one with that bloody hatchet. And I was like, I didn't just see that, did I?
Yeah.
What the hell have they got me booked here for? But again, it was another one of those things where I was like, okay, well, one thing I haven't had time, been able to do in my trajectory over the years is true sports entertainment. The cinematic type of stuff that you see that's been in vogue in recent years. So I figured, well, let's give that a shot too. And to some degree, if you do it right, it gives you a sizzle reel for acting as opposed to just cutting wrestling promos. And that's another one of those things where you have to, those segments aren't wrestling.
Right.
They're little movies. They're little movies, what they are. So I gauged them on that. Man, I love working with those girls. They're all talented as hell and they're fun. And, I have nothing but time for Rosemary. She is a great character. Totally committed 100% to her presentation. She will not, won't break character, and she doesn't care. She keeps that keeps that brand strong. And you know, I always see her. She's always brainstorming and always writing little ideas down in her book. And it's been a real pleasure working with her and Sue and Taya, all of them. Real great bunch of girls here.
So a couple more questions I want to ask you real quick before we go. You participated in ECW One Night Stand in 2005,
yeah.
The reunion show. And obviously, you know, I wasn't there in person, but seeing it on video and rewatching it, I mean, the atmosphere was just incredible. And it feels like, and everything that I've read about it, it feels like it was a genuine case of like WWE just saying like, just do your thing. Just, you know, telling Paulie to come out there and do your thing, you know? And
here, let me,
I'm curious if that felt like that to you, and you know, what your experience was on the show.
You know, they basically stayed out of the way, except they obviously had to insert some WWE people into it. But no, it was a great nostalgia fest. The crowd was insane, and it was funny watching Vince and Johnny Ace backstage. They didn't know what the hell ECW was. They didn't understand it, but you could see the money signs go off in Vince's eyes when he saw Sandman do his entrance. You know what I mean? They were like, I mean, you can see them kind of rolling their eyes at first, like who's this gang of ragamuffins, you know? Sure. But when they saw the reaction those people got, and the way the love that the crowd actually had for those performers that they had not seen in a few years at that time, you could see his wheels returning, and that obviously led to them starting the rebirth of ECW, which they completely screwed up. But yeah, it was also my first time, so I got to say, you know, I worked for WWE for 2 days. I'll say this. Totally first class. You know, I mean, if you're divorced from any politics or drama, you couldn't ask for a better run show.
Yeah. You
know, people chasing you down to give you money. Oh, you didn't get to draw money. Here, let me, you know, it was just a lot of fun. A super experience.
So kind of to wrap up, just most recently, you know, we saw you in NWA and then,
yeah.
You know, right before that, working with AEW. I mean, you've really literally at this point pretty much worked everywhere that one could work. So talk a little about what you're doing today and your work with NWA.
I'm in NWA, Billy Corgan's promotion, which airs on Fight Network. I believe you can get a subscription for it for like $4.99 a month, and that gives you access to their entire library back over the years. They've got a really strong, they also have a show that airs on YouTube on Saturday mornings, I believe, at noon perhaps, called NWA USA. They've got a great roster. Billy Corgan's very passionate about the product. We have wrestlers that look like wrestlers. They're, you know, that's not a room full of guys that are 5'6" and 180 pounds. You know, you've got grown men with muscles in the locker room. The female division in there is super strong. Billy's a smart businessman, so he's not going to piss all of his money piss his money away up front. You know, he's not going to go try to get in the Monday Night Wars or anything like some other people did and lost everything. But he believes in the streaming platform being the future of where wrestling is going to be going. So he's dedicated to that. It's been a joy being there. They've had me with a guy named Judas, who wrestled as Michael Judas in the Southern Indies before there. And he's a super talented, big tough guy. They've also had me recently paired with Sal Rinaro and Gags the Gimp. Gags the Gimp is one of those another happy accident. When this was presented to me, I thought, how on earth is this going to work?
Yeah.
And man, it's been, we're going to wind up having to turn to baby face because the crowd loves it. You know, it's such a preposterous, a guy in a gimp outfit with a zipper mask and all that.
Yeah.
The crowd loves it. So I go there, I think, I guess every 2.5 months or so. We go and we tape 4 to 6 to 8 weeks of TV, depending on the depending on what they have scheduled there. But I really enjoyed that. That's also a throwback. It has a throwback feel to it. It looks, yeah. If you haven't seen it, it looks like the old WTCG studios or TBS studios, Gordon Solie, Georgia Championship Wrestling days.
Yeah.
They've got the set dressed the same way. And everything's done live there. So promos are done pretty much in one take. You know, they're not, they're not overproduced. So you have to be thinking, because if you screw up, you know, you flubbed it, you got to keep going, because they're not editing it out. So that's been fun. That's kind of like working without a net, you know? Yeah. And it's fun because, you know, in other places, if they give you too long to sit and think about your material, I'll have a tendency to overdo it and it might not come out sounding as organic. Billy will call me into the room and say, okay, here's your promo. Your guy's going against whatever, Mr. X. And there might be one line that, that's the bullet point of the whole promo.
Yeah.
And he just says, go. And it's like, pop a wheelie and take off and hope you land on the right spot. But I've had a lot of, I've really enjoyed NWA. They have a great product, great roster. And I strongly suggest that wrestling fans look it up. I think you'll be pleased.
Yeah, you know, we had the opportunity to talk to Austin Idol last year, and of course he was talking a lot about his, you know, working with NWA and everything, and I know that we've got fans of the product, and we've been fortunate enough to sign some of the wrestlers that work for NWA and, you know, have them in the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm never going to think more wrestling is a bad thing, you know what I mean? I think that, right. I think that there's space at the table for everybody, and I'm so glad that we've got, you know, AEW and NWA and Impact around today, because I think that, you know, the fact is if all we had was WWE, we'd be a lot poorer for it, you know, as wrestling fans.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, one last question, and then we want to share the artwork with you. You know, recently, the Dark Side of the Ring episode, I guess not recently, it's been a little bit now, but
September.
About Canyon aired, and of course, you were a huge part of that. And hopefully you don't mind me asking this, but there's been some controversy about the show in general, about, you know, things being taken out of context and the editing of comments and stuff. And I'm curious because I thought you brought a lot to the table, and I ended up enjoying that episode as much as one can enjoy a story like that. And I'm just curious about your experience with that, and if you felt like you were represented fairly, and if you thought, more importantly, Canyon was represented fairly.
Yeah, I think he was represented fairly. Those guys were a joy to work with. And I watched that show a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it was like 9 months between when we filmed it and, or when they interviewed us and it came out, but they interviewed me for 3.5 hours. They interviewed Dallas Page for like 3 hours. Everybody was talked to for like 3 hours, mm-hmm. at least. So you've got probably, let's say at least 20 hours of footage that they have to, go through to build. They've got 48 minutes once commercials are taken in to tell us a person's life story. So there are things that have to be on there was a lot left on the cutting room floor. I mean, I wish they had, what one criticism I've gotten from people about it is they thought that I made Canyon sound bad. Because they also didn't get to hear, you know, the other hour and a half of wonderful things about him. But I wasn't talking about him being a bad person. Yeah. And my problems with him actually lasted from March of 97 till about October of 97 in WCW. And then we never had a problem again. But, you know, he was dealing with his own stuff. And, you know, I wanted to be a good friend. I didn't want him. I wasn't going to stooge him off. I mean, I'm going to get fired. You know, for an unsafe work environment, the guy who put me on a national stage, he was my friend, you know, but I don't think they could have told that story and hit all the points and edited it any differently than they did. I thought they did a great job editing it. One thing that, which I brought up earlier, people thought that the show was out of sync because they talked about the Blood Runs Cold push being killed by the NWO and saying that the NWO was there before Blood Runs Cold. Well, on TV they were. Blood Runs Cold was in the works and the guys were rehearsing well before NWO came along. But I mean, that's a kind of, does it change the flow of the story to not go into minutia when you have to leave things out? You know, I mean, it will take me in a minute and a half to explain that. That's a lot of TV time, right? You know, right. So there were a couple of things where people thought they got the editing wrong, but they weren't. There's just not time to go into it. But I hope that, you know, when people see it, that they realize that Canyon was a guy, you know, he loved wrestling business and he was constantly giving back to it. Constantly. He wanted to help guys get an opportunity. You know, he was all about helping younger guys get an opportunity. And, you know, he's just sorely missed. But I enjoyed the episode, you know, and it can make me well up some tears, you know, depending on how much I've had to drink when I see it. But, you know, but I think it's an accurate testament. I mean, I can't tell you what other episodes about other people have been like.
Of course.
I spoke to most everybody that was interviewed on it. And yeah, you have to leave things on the cutting room floor. It's just not, you know, and they told me that they might one day do an extended, like a Blu-ray set or something where they have all the footage in it, which I think would be great because I'd love for people to hear all of the great stuff that Canyon did and not just about him having mental illnesses or not about being a closeted gay, because there was a lot more to him than that. You know, a lot more to it.
Yeah, I mean, he was an incredible innovator, and I think was an incredible personality. And the Dark Side of the Ring episode certainly gave us a window into aspects of his life. And from my part, for whatever it's worth, I never got the impression that you were just, you know, telling bad things about him. I thought that the stories reflected the friendship, because you don't go through that type of stuff with somebody if you're not close to them. You know, you don't continue to have that kind of relationship with somebody if you're not close to him after the type of stuff that you two shared. So I personally didn't get that impression, for whatever it's worth. But I thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and we want to show you before you go here. We want to show you your card art for the James Mitchell card that was released just a couple months ago, actually.
We're getting some copies out to him.
We're going to be sending some copies out to you, of course, for your own personal use. But here is the artwork for the card.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's a great card, and it, you know, pairs up nicely, of course, with the Prince Karras card. But you can use it with anybody, which our game fans.
That's have super. Done, so.
Yeah.
Prince Karras. Who was the artist on this?
His name is Warner Meek.
Warner Meek. He did both of them. Yeah.
Yep, he did both of them. He's our kind of our lead artist on all of our Legends of Wrestling products and independent wrestling products that we put out. And he's great. We've worked with him, and he does, you know, he does commissions. So if you want some different art, hit him up.
And so the other side of that would have like the move set or whatever.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
My character can do.
Exactly. And so, yeah, your card has, you know, the opportunity to get involved in the match, you know, as from a, you know, managerial perspective. And then the Prince Karras card, for instance, will have, like, you know, each of the moves that he does and, you know, comeback stuff and defensive, you know, situations as well. So
it's cool. If you're playing a wrestler, do you have to hit a certain role, number on the roll to use the manager card?
No, the nice thing is that it's optional. So it's one of those things that if you're playing the game, because the nice thing is it's got a solitary component to it. You can play it by yourself. You don't have to just play against other people. But there are situations that occur, you know, like if a match goes out of the ring, for instance, or, you know, if there's a pinfall attempt by another wrestler, you can have the choice to involve the manager in the match. So you get a lot of power of choice throughout the course of the game, which is cool. We'll make sure to send you, of course, a rule book and, you know, set, so that you've got all the
tools. Oh yeah, I'd love that, man.
Yeah,
that would be super.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to get another version of you in your current look on the scene today. That would be pretty neat to have.
Consider this your permission.
Okay, well, we'll definitely be doing
this. This is your verbal release.
Oh well, thank you so much for that.
I'm very flattered to be in that. To me, as a kid who grew up, you know, loving this stuff, and when I was a kid, there was no wrestling merchandise. You had to take the Mego dolls and pretend they were the wrestlers. Anytime anything like this comes out, I'm just very flattered and honored to, you know, that somebody thinks enough of me to actually sell merchandise, you know, with my ugly mug on it. So I do appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you know, one of our missions, especially with the Legends of Wrestling line, is to pay tribute and honor the names in the history of the business. It's something that we're very passionate about, and you know, we even have a relationship with the Trago Synthes Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa, and you know, that we try to align that mission with, because it's important. You know, it's important that nobody gets left behind or forgotten. And
right,
you know, somebody even mentioned in the chat about, you know, trying to get Canyon into the game, for instance, and just, you know, we want to be able to honor people. And you know, we even do charity auctions, for instance, for the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, and I think you heard people talking about that prior to starting the interview. We've raised $11,000 this year, which is, you know, just awesome. You know, I'm so thrilled with what we've been able to do. So yeah, we want everybody in the game. We want, you know, we want to be able to have cards for everybody. We want everybody that is a part of the game to have their cards so they can use as merch or whatever, you know, do whatever they want with them. But but thank you for being a part of the game. Thank you for being a part of the convention today. And before you go, if there's anything else, obviously you talked about NWA, but if there's anything else you want to plug, if there's anywhere that people can find you, reach out to you, the floor is yours, sir.
You can find me on Twitter, handle at Minister Real. And I'm on Facebook. There are a couple of fake accounts, but mine, if it's the picture of me, I think it's James Mitchell.731, maybe, might be the actual address. But if you look up James Mitchell on Facebook, if you find the one with the bald head doing this as the avatar or whatever, that would be mine. There are some fake ones, but you can hit me up there. From time to time, I have merch available that I just actually had some, what do you call them? Like a voodoo doll. Throw pillows. A company called Cheapo Grosso put those out. Those are available on Etsy at cheapogrosso.com. But that's about it. So I hope to be speaking to you guys soon, and I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we would love to talk to you again. And again, thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend, and take care of yourself. Thank you again for being a part of the game.
May all of your stains be large ones. We'll see you.
Well, that was the Father James Mitchell interview from Galacticon. And again, what a great time that was. I really enjoyed talking to him. I tried to ask questions that I didn't necessarily think that, you know, he'd been asked a lot lately. You know, even when it came to Canyon stuff, you know, he had just participated in that Dark Side of the Ring not that long ago, which had aired. So I didn't necessarily want to talk too much about that, rehash that, because I figure that stuff's out there. So I tried to kind of ask stuff that, you know, maybe, you know, he hadn't had a chance to talk about quite as much recently. Hopefully that was mission accomplished, and people enjoyed that interview. I know, you know, anytime I get the opportunity to talk to these folks, I always feel really lucky, and James Mitchell was no exception. Mike, thoughts on James Mitchell?
I mean, it was kind of cool that he was like in, I don't know where he was exactly, but it was kind of cool. And I mean, you can tell his passion for the business and all the stories he's got. It just, it's a neat interview, and I thought you did a good job, Sam. And I'm just glad that, you know, people had the opportunity to see it at Galacticon, and now I'm glad to, you know, give him another chance, you know, for those who maybe were doing other things, missed part of it, or, you know, just wanted to hear it again. I think it's great that we're able to provide that content to him this week.
Yeah, you know, we don't want anybody to get left behind or forgotten. And yeah, you know, it's one of those things that anytime, you know, we wrap up one of these interviews, there's always more, you know, that you wanted to ask or you wanted to talk about. And hopefully we'll get the opportunity to do that with him again down the road. He seemed open to that, and certainly was excited to see his card art as well, wasn't he, Todd?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, definitely like that. And yeah, I also mentioned, maybe we need something with the new look, and, you know, him be like, all right, let's do it. And I'm like, okay. So maybe we'll have to look for an opportunity to do that in the future. Yeah, what a great guy. I was in the middle of Galacticon, so I was running back and forth a little bit, so I missed some of the good portions of it. The parts I did listen to were great, and I look forward to listening to the rest of it this week.
Yeah. And he just, you know, like you said, such a great personality, was totally open. Didn't seem like there was anything that was, you know, off limits. I think we strayed away from getting maybe as risque as he is capable of for the most part, but it was a heck of a lot of fun.
Can I just say I'm disappointed though, Sam.
Uh-oh.
I'm disappointed Todd broke kayfabe. Like, he acted like he didn't just listen to that interview. Right? Like, I mean, come on. Kayfabe, Todd.
We gotta pretend that we actually listened along. That this isn't
that's right.
That this isn't just like 10 seconds after we cut to the interview. well, we hope you enjoyed that. And again, you know, one of the cool things about the cons that we have, and anytime we have special guests, is that the podcast gives us an opportunity to run those back. So if you missed out on it, you get to see it. Of course, it's always a lot of fun to be able to participate, you know, live while it's happening. You get the opportunity to throw some questions at us, which we had a few that we field from the audience, but most of them, I just kind of ran with, you know, my own line of questioning. But it's always great anytime, you know, we get promoters throwing in their questions as well. So who knows who's going to be next, but whoever it is, you can obviously attend live. And if you miss out, we will certainly try to bring it to you on the podcast so you don't miss out completely. Speaking of missing out, there are some people that we don't want to miss out on this week that we wanted to give some shout outs to. Todd, take it away.
Well, one person I definitely want to give a shout out to is promoter Sean Ryan, who sent over to us something he's been working on for quite a while. And it's very, very impressive. His Champions of the Galaxy Encyclopedia. This thing blew all of us away.
Yeah. Incredible work.
Yeah. So I don't know. I figured how many hundreds of pages it was, but like categorized like every character of every set across, you know, early classics, the GWF, any of the offshoot ones, you know, that were mainline releases from Phil Singer Games. He hit everything into this and just kind of going deep into all the storylines. It was absolutely amazing the way it formatted and everything, and kind of lists of ongoing, you know, teams and tag teams and what wrestler cards are active each year and whatnot. It's just amazing resource he put together that he shared with Tom and myself. I kind of shared with Sam and Mike, and just really, really blown away by your effort, Sean, if you're listening here. We're going to look to see if there's a way that, you know, we can share that with the rest of the galaxy at one point.
Yeah, yeah. Sean definitely gets the no prize for this week. and Tom would appreciate that I use that reference. But I am blown away by it, and I, you know, haven't gotten super far through it, but I was literally kind of just going page by page. Like, I wasn't even jumping around to find like entries for my favorite guys or whatever. I was just going page by page, and it was so cool because one of the things that he did, which I loved, is not only did he chart the early classics wrestlers, but, you know, he charted the rosters year by year, which I thought was really cool to do, because obviously that stuff is, you know, in the handbook, and there is a spot for it on the boards as well. But it's pretty cool to have that kind of in one, you know, document like this. So I enjoyed that, and it's what an incredible piece of work by a fan. So promoter, and I love the idea of trying to find a way to get it into other promoters' hands. Mike, what about you, sir?
Well, I, on a similar vein, Tom Tutwiler just produced some stuff that he forwarded that is on a really similar vein, and just amazing content. So I don't know if we're going to have to find a way to combine these two things or what, but there's just some really great content that people are producing, and you can see how much they love the game, and it's just coming through. And Tom's done this before. This isn't like the first time Tom's, you know, stepped up and done some great stuff for the community. So you know, this is a nice little bit of work he's done. So I just wanted to give him a shout out for that.
Yeah, that's very cool. You know, to have these kind of resources, I think, you know, knowing that there's work to be done with, you know, the wiki online, and knowing that we haven't had like a GWF files in a while, and knowing that, you know, obviously all the fan produced content that we get as far as cards and sets and matches and, you know, the stuff like the play mats, you know, that Grant, I know, helped like do some images for and graphics for. And, you know, we get a lot of really cool stuff like that. But to have kind of, you know, these tomes, I think a lot of people would really, really enjoy them. And obviously, you know, kind of in a way, it's reminiscent of the Ringside Companion that we just got. And, you know, Volume 2, of course, on the way. To have, you know, that at your fingertips, a resource with everything there is really neat. So, you know, I wanted to give a quick shout out, and this one is going to be a little bit of a strange one, kind of a bit of, you know, to change of pace, but I have a dear friend of mine who does not play the game. It's just, you know, he kind of was aware of the game, I think peripherally, just because I had it and he'd seen it, you know, when we were in college or whatever, but, you know, he's never picked it up, but he's just one of those people that, you know, he has so much love for his friends that he follows their endeavors, whatever they're doing. So he literally listens to, like, you know, every episode of the podcast, as well as, you know, Fate's Wide Wheel, the Quantum Leap podcast that I do. And just, you know, he's so supportive in that way. And he's an incredibly important person to me. And sadly, this week, his father passed away. I just was, you know, was thinking a lot about him. And, you know, by happenstance, I'm going to have the opportunity to attend the services and be there, you know, with him. And I haven't seen him, you know, in quite a while. We just haven't had the opportunity because he lives out in Arizona. I just wanted to say that, you know, Christopher Redman, should he ever take a step into this community beyond listening to the podcast, he would enrich and enliven the community even more than it already is, because he's an incredible human being. And I, of course, am thinking a lot about him, and I appreciate his support over the years, you know, in not only this endeavor, but all of my endeavors. But the fact that, you know, he listens to a podcast about a game that he doesn't even play, I've always thought is pretty damn cool. And I, again, just really appreciate the support, and I love you dearly, and I know that it's been a tough week, but I'm really looking forward to seeing you this weekend, in spite of the circumstances not being great. So I just wanted to say that, because, like I said, he's been an incredibly important part of my life for a while. It's been almost 20 years, I think. So Chris, again, thank you so much, and I'll see you soon. With all of that said, I think we are ready to just wrap things up and get out of here and leave, hopefully, the promoters wanting more for next week. So remember to leave your thoughts about the Fantasy League on the board. Let us know your interest, if you want to participate, if you just want to watch, if you have any thoughts or ideas, opinions, feelings, whatever, share those with us. Thank you to everyone, of course, that did. I know that last week's episode was a little long, but the folks that left comments about the state of the business and kind of their feelings on that, we really appreciate that. Of course, we also appreciate all the other content providers in the Filsinger Games universe, including the Uncharted Territory crew, and Dave Little, and of course Lee Longpre, Mike Delve, and Brock Atkinson with the Facebook series. I think this week they did a video on Bruton Massacre, and they had Kevin and Matt Butcher on for that. I haven't had a chance to listen to it or watch it yet, but I'm looking forward to it, because, you know, if somebody's talking about Bruton Massacre, I'm down. Of course, Grant Pachoco as well, with Solo Promoter. And anybody and everybody who's out there rolling the dice, posting on the boards, creating bootlegs, thinking about matches, new rules. I can't wait for us to have a conversation about all the discussion that has happened just recently, even about rules and you know, ideas and house rules that people have been using. I think that'll be a cool chat when we get the chance to. Thank you, of course, promoters, for making this the greatest game in the galaxy. We appreciate you greatly. Mike, any parting thoughts? Uh-oh.
Good night to our friends on the Baltic.
Fantastic. Thank you for not leaving me hanging. Todd, any parting thoughts, sir?
Yeah, just stay tuned. Coming up, we have a lot of ideas and kind of changes for the format of the podcast here. So, you know, expect something a little bit different. You know, we've been kind of, you know, utilizing our content from Galacticon the last 2 weeks, but I think we're looking at doing some other things in the future, kind of sharing some of our results more often, and maybe even playing a match or two online during the podcast, especially now that we have video with it. I think that'll be a little bit more interesting than trying to do play by play with an online, while we're just in an audio medium. So.
Right. Well, you know, and one of the things just to kind of tease is that, you know, we've been talking about finding ways to integrate things into FTR as well, so that it feels even more like a living, breathing world, you know, beyond just the booklet. And of course, yeah. Mike has some exciting stuff, I think, that he wants to share Centra-wise as well, even if it's just, you know, his results and stuff. So, yeah, some cool stuff on the horizon. And I think, you know, we'll look into, you know, continuing to tighten up the show and find ways to, you know, to really kind of like nail down our continuing segments. We haven't done a character spotlight in a while or a legend spotlight in a while. And we've just had so many other things kind of going on, but the opportunity to bring some of those segments back will be a lot of fun as well. So stay tuned, promoters. We just want to continue to, you know, get better as we go along and find ways to bring you even, you know, more content and learning, not only from the stuff that we're doing, but also from the stuff that everyone else is doing. You know, as Todd mentioned earlier, kind of the inspiration to bring back his decades old idea for the Fantasy League was inspired by the Uncharted Territory crew. So, you know, I think that's one of the coolest things about a community like this. We can learn from each other. We can grow and do new things and take those influences. So looking forward to that. It should be a lot of fun. But in the meantime, take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. Stay safe out there. And we will be back next week with a brand new episode of Roll Up, the official Phil Singer Games podcast.